Scott Pomfret thinks of himself as a Boston-based gay Catholic fiction writing lawyer eroticist. His latest book, Since My Last Confession, chronicles his spiritual evolution since becoming a lector in his church. It's an interesting read for all faiths that frankly and humorously addresses both his internal struggle with a faith that says homosexuality behavior is sinful and his attempts to effect change in the church. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about your book, Since My Last Confession. What motivated you to write it?
Easy. Rage. Rage at the machine. I had the experience in 2000 of going through, you know, four basic sort of anti-gay incidents within the church, starting with the pedophile priest scandal that was then blamed on gay priests, followed by Catholic Charities stopping adoptions for altogether because they didn't want to do adoptions for gay parents anymore, followed by the ban on gay priests in the seminary, and then for me, the big whopper, Cardinal O'Malley's very vehement and expensive opposition to same-sex marriage.
You know, I found your humor pretty wonderful, and it also answered a lot of my questions I had about the Catholic Church. As a gay man, are you out in your church?
When I first got to St. Anthony Shrine in Boston, my church, I assumed I was the only gay guy actually attending Mass. I learned after a year or two, though, that the place was rife with gay men, including the friars, of course. And when the friars asked me to take a larger leadership role at the Shrine, and this was back in 2003 during the same-sex marriage fight, and I had been up with my partner protesting on Beacon Hill, I decided, hey, I've got to let them know who I am. And so I went in and I told them. I said, I'm a gay man. I have a partner of then 5 years, roughly. I protest in favor of same-sex marriage. My face has been on TV. And best of all, I write gay romance novels. And the priest turned to me and he said, we at the Shrine believe that the Vatican's position on same-sex marriage is cruel. And so when can you start? And from then on, I was fully out at church.
Well, tell us about these, you know, writing gay porn and erotica and how you maintain a balance between that and your church.
Sure. I mean, for me, the people ask about the conflict between it, and I don't perceive the conflict. To me, God gave us the gift of our sexuality and gave me, you know, a sort of minor league gift to write about sex. And I believe that what we're writing are actually very conventional on one level. That is to say, two people meet up, they fall desperately in love, they have some sort of commitment to one another, and live monogamously, happily ever after. It really doesn't get much more conventional than that. The only difference is they happen to have hot sex along the way.
What about your romantic gay novels? I understand you have a publishing company.
We do. We actually started in 2003, about 2 weeks before the Goodrich decision about gay marriage in Massachusetts was made, which was fortuitous timing. And we put two books out originally, and it caught the attention of Warner Books, and they published. They took one of the two books and republished it in June of 2005. We continued to self-publish additional books over the years since then, and in 2009, Polari Publishing, our new publisher, is going to put out our latest, which is called Email, M-A-L-E.
Great title. I want to talk to you about the Lisa Miller article in Newsweek, The Religious Case for Gay Marriage. Do you have any comments about this?
Sure. I mean, I think Lisa Miller has really set out to educate people about the Bible. People, usually evangelicals, think they know what the Bible says, and in fact, oftentimes they don't, or they pick out parts selectively to emphasize. And she's really laid out in, you know, a very public forum the basic contradictions the Bible has in it compared to our way of life. Put aside the homosexuality issue, you know, the various bans, the way the Bible favors slavery, things that we would never accept today, but for some reason the Bible is always used to bash homosexual relationships, gay marriage. I think what's important is the arguments are not new by any stretch of the imagination. People have been writing about this for ages. But what is new is to have it in such a great public forum where you know, a lot of people are going to be exposed to these contradictions. This is key because I think in Massachusetts, one of the things that saved same-sex marriage here from an amendment similar to California's amendment was the participation of overtly religious folks in the movement. Specifically, the Religious Coalition for the Freedom to Marry was instrumental in getting together people who might have been on the fence, particularly religious people on the fence, and bringing them over to see the benefits and the joy in gay marriage. And the Religious Coalition was made up of over 1,000 clergy from various faiths. Unfortunately, no Catholics, but from other faiths. And I think made the difference here. I remember on the day that the final vote was taken in which the amendment was defeated, the Religious Coalition started on one side of Boston Common and walked across it, singing a big mass of people, and literally they parted the ways of the anti marriage equality folks with their sign, one man, one woman signs. They parted that group, walked between them, singing hymns, and came up, climbed the steps of Beacon Hill, and then the entire crowd was singing along with them, and it literally, you know, brought chills down, ran, made chills run down my spine.
You know, recently the Vatican has refused to sign a basic statement opposing inhumane treatment of LGBT people. By doing this, the Vatican is sending a message that violence and human rights abuses against LGBT people are acceptable. What are your feelings about this?
I think that one of the strong currents in this debate recently has been the Vatican and other religious groups saying essentially, you know, we hate the sin, but we love the sinner. And the Vatican's catechism says that it is against, quote, unjust discrimination, unquote, against gay people. But this recent Vatican position is clearly at odds with that. The Vatican is basically saying we believe in the criminalization of same-sex relations. We believe in jailing gay people. If that's not unjust discrimination, I don't know what is. And it really gives the lie to this kind of kinder, gentler tone that they're attempting to take recently in the press.
Since most Catholics and Catholic teaching tell us that people are entitled to live with basic human dignity without the threat of violence, how can you work through this kind of a blow from your church?
You know, this is the key here is understanding what the church is. To me, the church, one small slice of it, are the guys who wear hats, the bishops and the Pope. The vast majority are the people in the grassroots churches, in the pews, the priests who serve them. And what happens at the grassroots is typically, not always, but typically very, very different from the kind of rhetoric one gets from above. Me personally, I'd love to cut off the guys with hats and return to a church that is all grassroots, that is the church of the first, second, third century.
Interesting. So with times like this, how can you be gay and Catholic without going crazy?
You got to laugh. you got to see the absurdity. You got to joke with the priests who are, you know, spending their vacations down in Provincetown in a little condo together and then coming back and having to, you know, toe the line with their cardinal from time to time. The reason I wrote this book and the reason I wrote a funny book is because rage is spirit-destroying, and humor is spirit-uplifting. And for me, you know, you can either let your rage consume you and destroy your spirit, or you can learn to find the places that are points of laughter and live through it that way.
Well, speaking of humor, you're also an enforcement attorney for the United States Security and Exchange Commission in its Boston District office. You must be very busy now. What's your opinion of our economy and these corporate bailouts?
I
I will say, speaking of trying to find something to laugh about, you know, everyone's got their 401k joke that kind of gets them through when that they stop looking at their statements and watching their retirement, you know, get curtailed. But we are busy, and, you know, my side's on the enforcement side, which means that all these plunging stocks, all these companies going bankrupt means that all the dirt that would have, may have gone uncovered had the economy continued good is now evident to everyone. I think just today it was a $50 billion Ponzi scheme is on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. So we've definitely got a lot of work ahead. I can't really keep comment on the bailout. I don't speak for the SEC for sure, but I like to think we've got to put the right guy in the White House. For a lot of reasons, but particularly on the economy, and I'm actually kind of hopeful.
So what do you see for our LGBT future community with the Obama administration?
I see that we should have some patience, but be quite firm. So I don't want to make him fight our battles first, but I don't want him to forget who helped him get where he is. And I see the first thing that's going to, of the various things that's going to happen, I'd like to see Don't Ask, Don't Tell go down in a couple years. I'd like to see, speaking, see domestic partnership benefits for federal employees and quietly disassemble the Defense of Marriage Act over time. I think there's no question that we're going to get an Employment Non-Discrimination Act in within the next 2 years. The real question is it going to be trans-friendly or not? Barney Frank said in a recent Advocate article that he thinks he's going to be able to get a trans-friendly one through. So I'm hopeful.
Well, Congresswoman Baldwin has really been for that from day one. You know, I'm glad that Congressman Frank is finally coming around. Back to the economy just a little bit. Do you think that religious institutes should be taxed? I mean, millions was spent to pass Prop 8, you know, taking away civil rights, you know, and this is on untaxable money. What do you think about that?
I think that it is certainly a difficult issue. One of the points of my book is about the Catholic Church spending millions of dollars, although not as much as the Mormons spent, the Catholic Church spending millions in Massachusetts to oppose same-sex marriage. I personally think that religious institutions should not be getting into the political reign as institutions. I think they should speak what they believe to be the truth, as is their First Amendment right, but they should not be getting involved. It's a harder question as to whether, if they do get involved, should money be, should the tax exempt status be taken away from them. Certainly, if they supported a candidate, that would happen. But when you're talking about an issue as opposed to a candidate, harder question for me. I personally question, my best take on it is that religious institutions should be tax exempt to the extent that they are providing services to the poor, services that are educational, things that would otherwise be tax exempt, and they should not be tax exempt just qua religious institutions.
Well, it brings me to my next question. What are your thoughts on the separation of church and state?
I'm definitely in favor. I think
I mean, it doesn't really exist anymore, but I try to ask the question.
I think that there is a deliberate campaign by evangelicals and by the church to some extent to conflate civic institutions and religious institutions and civic laws and religious laws, and we need to get to a place where we can understand that our religious law may be inflexible, but our civic law has got to be for everyone, not just the members of the group. And one of the, Andrew Sullivan recently wrote about a particular instance of that, divorce. The Catholic Church believes that marriage is forever, that it's an ontological change, and that you cannot get unmarried or divorced. And yet, you know, the Catholic Church is no longer in the business of trying to make the civic law match the religious law.
that's the model that we should have going forward.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I interviewed Kate Clinton earlier this week.
Yes.
And she felt that, you know, agreeing with, you know, on the same line of what you just said, that therefore that if you get a divorce, then it's a felony, and then convicted felons can't vote. Which is a perfect idea.
Absolutely.
I mean, I really handle the situation. do you have a favorite quote or a mantra to get you through times like these?
You know, I like times like these. I'm proud to be alive now. I am so grateful that we had the opportunity here in Massachusetts to fight the same-sex marriage fight. And frankly, I'm grateful to be able, you know, to be able to stand still being in the church and still, I hope, confronting Cardinal O'Malley with my book and otherwise every day. So I actually find them exciting times rather than sort of dispiriting times.
Were there any repercussions from writing this book?
Yeah, and strangely enough, the very same priest who said, "When can you start?" Summoned me in late September, said he wanted to meet me after a mass that I was lector at, that is, I read from the Bible at, and he pulled me aside, and he had a crumpled copy of the Boston Herald in his hand that he kind of shook at me, and he said, "This article says it's a contradiction between your writing these romance novels and your being a lector in this church, and I think it's a contradiction, and I'm going to fix the contradiction. You are not allowed to be a lector in this church any longer." That was the number one repercussion. The worst part of it was, though, that the Shrine, which used to have a gay and lesbian spirituality group, terminated that group, apparently in reaction to the book, but certainly at the same time as when they terminated me, which, again, was one of those instances of sort of gratuitous church cruelty, because, you know, if you want to get rid of me, fine, but why are you ending the experience, the spiritual experience of these other gay and lesbian people in the group just on my account? So there have been a few repercussions, but, you know, as I tell people, it's two steps forward, one back, and I'm certain we're going to change the church. It might be 500 years going, but I think we're going to change it.
Well, that's great, Scott. I want to thank you so much for doing this with us today.
Thanks for doing this in general.
Okay, well, have a great day, have a great weekend, and have a wonderful holiday, Scott.
You too, Charlotte. Thanks for taking the time with me.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.